It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Morena, Mayor Phil Goff, how are you?
Morena, Rachel, I'm doing very well, thank you. Christmas is coming. it did rain a bit last week, but it doesn't look like it's going to rain much in the next week. And the sun shining, yeah.
It's a pretty good lineup of things there. We do have to touch on, you know, some not so good stuff, which was a bit of a COVID scare last week. I guess it is quite a good reminder that level one is not level none, as we have been, you know, told several times now. It has prompted this change in mask usage, and we're going to see mandatory masking on public transport in Tāmaki Makaurau from Thursday this week. And we're also seeing mandatory masking on all domestic flights across the whole country. Now, what are your thoughts on this? Are you pleased to hear this being brought in?
Yeah, look, I think it's a small inconvenience for a much greater reward. When the Prime Minister rang on Friday midday and said, look, we've done the genome sequencing testing, and the good news is that it's identical to the Defence Force case of a couple of weeks earlier, so we don't have another outbreak where we have an unknown source, I was mightily relieved. My concern when I heard the details of the latest case from Ashley Bloomfield, the person had visited so many different places, I thought, well, look, here's a real danger that we'll face another August-type contagion. Mm. And then I look across at the Tasman and I see Adelaide that hadn't had a case of community transmission for months, and suddenly they've got 17 cases that spring up overnight. You realise what the scale of the risk is.
Yeah.
This thing, once it gets out of control, it's really hard to put back in the box. So what the government's talking about, on advice from its epidemiologists, is that we do wear masks on public transport, and we do wear masks when we're flying. That's solely related at the moment in terms of public transport to Auckland, though I suspect it might be implemented across the wider country. And look, I just think, if that's what the medical, you know, authorities are saying we need to do as a preventive measure, mm-hmm. for God's sake, let's do that, because the last thing I want for Auckland is for us to be back at, level 3 or 4, or even level 2. We know the social disruption. We know we're mm-hmm. we're approaching Christmas. We want people to spend time with their families over Christmas, So taking sensible measures as precautions really makes sense to me, so I fully support it.
Now, also part of this is managing big behavioural changes for Aucklanders and people across the whole country, because it isn't necessarily natural for us yet to be wearing masks on the day-to-day, although I think we are starting to see it more commonly, and it feels less jarring when you sort of walk into the supermarket and people are all masked up, which is a good thing. But another thing that kind of sits in that wheelhouse, I guess, is the COVID tracer and the QR codes. And we're still seeing, you know, slow uptake on some of the scanning, and we have been told repeatedly that that is one of our major, you know, defence mechanisms here as well. Mm. What do you think could be done or should be being done to make it easier for people to get into the habit of scanning those QR codes?
Well, it's amazing how we all become so complacent very quickly. how many more skiers do we need before we abandon that complacency and say, look, a normal part of my day-to-day life, you know, every day when I come into work, get my phone out, click on to the COVID app tracer, I'm going down to Shortland Street in a short while. You know, when I go into the office building down there, I'll be clicking onto the app. I've got Google search anyway, so, I'm being traced wherever I go. But that's just got to become second nature for us, and I think we got to the point where maybe one in five were doing their COVID app tracing. Look, let's not be complacent. Let's not put at risk the incredible gains that we've made in largely keeping ourselves COVID-free. Let's do the sensible little things that just take a moment of your time to help ensure that we don't get community transmission. It's common sense.
There is definitely a large element of personal responsibility. You've got to remember to do your COVID app yourself. You know, you can't actually force someone to get it out of their pocket. But I think that we are seeing a conversation around, could there be ways in which we see public buildings and also private businesses making it more accessible to jog people's, I guess, memory to remember to do that, because it is still one of those things that we're getting used to. It's not necessarily natural to stop and scan in still, because this is all quite new. How can we make it more, more of a directive for people? I know that you can walk into some shops and it's actually quite hard to find the QR code. You can walk into some public buildings and it can be quite hard to find the QR code. Do you think we could be seeing a move towards a more, I don't want to use the word mandatory, but more kind of compulsory way of setting up a scanning system or a sign-in, sign-out system?
Yeah, well, look, it's compulsory for businesses already to display the signs. And you're right, sometimes you go into a place and you've got to look around for it. That's not good. In our building, every lift has a code on it that you can scan into. So it's kind of impossible not to have the opportunity when you come into the building to scan. I think the government may yet contemplate making it a requirement for people to use their COVID app, or if they don't have a phone, to sign into a place, and they may do it in particular venues. It may be when you've got a large conglomeration of people coming together for a concert or something like that, or at a sports game, or it may be that you have it at public bars and restaurants where you're likely to pick it up. It seems quite possible that that's how the latest Auckland case developed. Somebody just with a casual contact with the Defence Force personnel individual that had it already a couple of weeks ago. It was as easy as that. They might have just passed in the street. They may have sat down in the same cafe. So I think, you know, every precaution that we can sensibly take without massively inconveniencing people, we ought to do, because the greater good is to make sure we don't get further community transmission. I just pulled the figures out yesterday. Worldwide, 51 million people have now contracted the virus, and that's going up by half a million a day. That's just incredible. For heaven's sake, we've just got to look at the reality of this, say, we really relish what we've got at the moment. To help protect that, let's do everything we can so that we don't go into a lockdown, where people don't suffer that social isolation, where we don't suffer the further financial cost. And I know from a council point of view, a further lockdown for us would be absolutely devastating. We're running out of options to make up for the income losses that we've suffered as a council. And there are businesses all over Auckland that are facing the same situation. So if we had to lock down, of course we would. But if we can do whatever we can do to prevent that happening, we need to do.
Now, I just wanted to briefly touch base, keeping it a little bit on COVID this morning, because it's probably a good time to talk about these things again.
Absolutely.
We have been looking at what might happen in a couple of years' time if we've still got closed borders, and this has meant some predictions have been made about what that could mean for the council's budget. Obviously, it could... your deficit could get quite a lot larger. What's going to be some of the methods that the council employs to, I guess, deal with that? Because, opening the borders isn't necessarily going to be happening anytime soon, and we are going to have to prepare for that. What is the council sort of tabling as options at the moment?
Yeah, well, look, obviously, we've got to live within our means like everybody does. And this year, this financial year, we've budgeted for a $450 million loss. But when we look at the fact that the borders may remain closed for quite some time, it's good news this morning. We've got another vaccine that looks like it's going to be workable. And there's always a good news scenario on one side, but you've got to plan for, you know, if not the worst case scenario, a negative scenario. And our finance people say, look, we may lose another $540 million dollars in income by 2024. That is over the next 3 years. Well, what we've been doing is trying to do more with less. But if the situation continued to deteriorate, then, you know, you run into the scenario where you have to do less with less. And what we've tried really hard in the emergency budget this year to do is to keep our investment up in vital infrastructure. So we're still spending, $2.5 billion on infrastructure this year. That wasn't easy to maintain given the impact on our finances. We've kept all of our essential services going. But in our long-term plan, we're looking at a whole lot of things, including, you know, a backlog of renewals and things like transport and community facilities. Mm. There are a whole lot of financial pressures there. And, you know, the bottom line always is that you have to manage your finances prudently and sensibly. You can't just hope and pray that things suddenly will get better and you don't have to take any remedial action. We're trying to take action without impacting on the wider economic situation by closing down more than we need to. So we're being cautious, we're trying to cut waste, we're trying to cut duplication, which is par for the course anyway. But it may be that we have to cut some things that normally, or it may not be cutting things, mm-hmm. It may be simply deferring things that we want to do. I really want to do this, you know, there's some important things that we want to do for the city, but we're going to have to defer it a year or two because of the financial situation. And that's a bit of a heartbreak for us, and it's not great for the people in the city, but it's what the circumstances require. So we'll continue to be rational, sensible, prudent. At the same time, we'll be working as hard as we can to keep key services going and to keep up our investment in infrastructure. And, you know, one of the positive things I should just add is that, you know, everybody was expecting that there'd be a whole big drop in building and resource consents. September, we had the biggest number of building consents on record and the year to September. So we're up to about 15,500. And the good news is that's building more houses so that we can deal with a accumulated backlog of housing shortage over many years, not stopping the housing prices going down, regrettably, going up, I should say. And, you know, that's an issue that the government's going to have to look at pretty seriously soon. Lower interest rates mean easier to buy properties, both for investors and first-home buyers, and that's putting real pressure on the housing market, even though we're building a record number of houses.
Well, we will be touching base on this again because it's not going to be a problem that goes away anytime soon. But thank you very much for your time this morning, Mayor Phil Goff. Always a pleasure. We'll talk to you again next Tuesday.
Great. Have a great week, Rachel, and to the listeners.
Talk to you then.
Cheers. Cool.
Bye.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Certainly.